This is a speaker meeting. We have asked two island women to share their experience, strength, and hope with us this afternoon. Each speaker will share for approximately 35 minutes. Help me welcome our first speaker, Sarah Anna from Waianae, Oahu.
I'm a blessed alcoholic who's honored to be your sister in recovery, and my name is Sarah. Okay. I need to do something before I start. We'll probably get 35 minutes. But anyway, I made a commitment when I started my step through that if ever I was honored to share that, I would dedicated to my higher power, so if you'll please allow me this. Dear God, I just praise, honor, and thank you for this privilege, this gift, not just recovery, Lord, but to be amongst the most precious women in the world, Lord. Thank you. Thank you. It is my honor to share, and as I've asked you all week and since I first found out about this honor, please use me as your vessel. I thank you for your love. In Jesus' name, amen. Thanks. This is for you guys. I must say my home group, right? My home group today is Sober Sisters, how relevant, and that we meet in Waianae, Hawaii. In fact, it's like a minute from my house now. My house is another blessing, but we don't have that much time anyway. I was thinking, you know, the very first time I was ever asked to share, I was like 7 or 9 months sober, and I'm saving my sobriety date, so just stay with me now. Anyway, I was 7 or 9 months sober, and I was just getting out of treatment, and they asked me to share, and at 15 past the hour, I was still at age 17. So I quickly learned you don't need all that history. And that we do share in a general way, because times after that, I got a little intimate. Actually, I got raw. I got real raw. Hawaiians call it aki. But I want you, if you're not from here, to go ask a local girl what aki means. And then ask her what vana means. You'll have fun this weekend with those two. But anyway, so I'm not going to go back to when I was 17, but I do want to say, and I'm sure that every beautiful soul sitting in this room knows that our disease started way long before we picked up that first drink and or drug. And my disease or ism started way back when I was little, being this color and moving when I was 2 years old to Santa Ana, California. Today, I know that I early belonged to a pack. I call it the minority pack. And God bless these women wherever they are. I would pray and I would be shocked and probably follow my okole. It's another word. If you haven't learned yet, go ask a local girl. Okole. Anyway, I early in Roosevelt Elementary School in Santa Ana, California in the early 60s. Yes, I'll be 45 in August. Anyway, I had a pack back then, and it was Susie Wong, let's not explain where Susie was from, Irma Garcia, and Audrey White. And Audrey White was African-American, and out of the three, she was my best buddy. And then I was this color with frizzy kind, we call it keave. That's mean hair that stick out, that's how come I have it tamed back here. But anyway, so we were friends back in California in the early 60s. And at that time, I was living with my mom and my two half-brothers. One is since deceased, fungus disease. But anyway, we were living up there, and at that time, my only father figure in my life, Daddy Mike, he was in Vietnam. And those of you that lived through that time know that Even if we didn't go over there and fight, it affected us back here at home. And that had an impact on my growing up. And then him coming home and beating the H-E-L-L out of my mom at the El Toro tarmac had an impact on my life. And my mom kept running away from him and going back to him and running away from him and going back to him. And I kept saying, I will never be like that. I'm sure I'm not alone when I say I got worse. You know, as alcoholics, we got to just do it one more. I did it 10 more times. But anyway, we came back from the mainland when I was still in elementary school. And I grew up here with my mom and my grandmother and my sisters, who I'd never really known growing up. And they all went to Sacred Heart Academy, which is a local Catholic private school here on the island. And this titta, that's another word, but actually we're all tittas. That means sister. Yeah, totally involved together, always. Yeah, titta. Anyway, that's my acronym. But anyway, we came back to Hawaii, and I just, you know, from the gate, I was always out of place. I was either too dark, or my hair was too frizzy, or I went to a public school and they went to a private school, or the thing in the family was, well, your mom jumped the fence. And when you're little, jumping the fence doesn't mean what it really means, you know. So I just grew up with a lot of rejection, and I fought real hard for attention. I fought real hard for attention. And how I got that attention, come talk story with me this weekend or ask any of my sisters, is make people laugh. So if you make people laugh, you'll get the attention. But as an active alcoholic and substance abuser, some of the things I did were not funny, obviously. And let's get right to that part. Okay, so we had two kids, God bless. I have a son and a daughter and a grandson. I brought his little pillow with me this weekend. Anyway, and I've been married and divorced twice, and been through hellacious, abusive relationships. And I will start all the way up until October 30th, 1993. If you live here and you watch the news, on that evening, you would have saw this face, probably 60 pounds lighter, like that, and short shots and just bags under the eyes, and being escorted into the downtown holding cell at the sheriff's Alakia courthouse. That's one thing. I mean, there's probably some other of us in this room that, yeah, we've been arrested, yeah, we've been on TV, but I was a correction officer for 10 years. Shall we? Having been a correction officer for 10 years and having worn the uniform, it's navy blue, having worn that uniform and having been a transporting officer for majority of my time, as that was my career, I turn the key, I strip search you, I put you in and out of your cell. And then I hit my bottom. And on that evening, October 30th, 1993, I was arrested and involved in undercover investigation of corrupt correction officers in Hawaii. I'm not proud of that. I'm also not proud of the fact that I didn't bring the substances, illegal substances, into the facility, but I was the walking, you know what. Anyway, got arrested, called my mom to go get my children out of a motel room that I had left them there with uncle. Ooh, I hate that word, uncle. No, it just stirs up junk. But anyway, and I remember them transporting me from the holding cell downtown to the women's correctional facility in Kailua on Wimmera Oahu. And I remember sitting in that cell block, wearing the orange uniform, sitting on that cold floor and not knowing what we know today as step one, but hitting it with a thump. And I hit that floor and I started crying, and I knew that my life, in using the F word, I mean, was more than unmanageable, was totally F. And that my lifestyle and my drinking and using had brought me to that point. And I'd like to tell all of you that I saw the light, I grabbed my Bible, and I did my time, and I walked out, but that's not the truth. That is where this disease truly is powerful, cunning, and baffling. One day before I was to be sentenced, living in an Oxford house in Aikahi, Hawaii, Kailua, went to church with a 24-year-old boy toy that, well, that's another story. In fact, there's a few more like that. Anyway, I went to church with him, and one of the girls that was staying in the house with me, and came out of church, and this was on June 4th or 5th, 1994. The next day, I was to be in a courtroom and receive my sentencing. I did a month and a half of incarceration time. And for those women of you that have been incarcerated, I know doing time is not easy. And I know a month and a half is candy. But for somebody that was a correction officer for 10 years, a month and a half was eternity. And that time drew me closer to the God of my understanding today, but not close enough to make that commitment. And I came out of church, and my roommate wanted to score, and, you know, he wanted to drink, and I said, no, okay. So, we ended up, and I ended up staying up, and ironing with the iron. with the iron, my olive green Savers special. Ladies, I don't know if you have Savers in the mainland, but that is the deluxe thrift store over here. And I bought this beautiful olive green, very suit, very business, very ready to get sentenced in dress. But remember now, I came out of church. First I was in church, promising God, Lord, tomorrow, you know that prayer. And coming out of church and feeling all renewed, and then getting in the car and then doing whatever. And then that night, crying while I'm ironing and crying while I'm trying to fix my hair and the bags and everything. And I get into the courtroom, and the presiding judge, who was assigned to hear my case, I won't disclose her name, but she's a very well-known, highly respected woman in the judicial field here in Hawaii. Excuse me. And I am the only correctional officer or law enforcement personnel that she had written personally a letter of recommendation, touting me for my professionalism in the courtroom. And just all kind of, you know, and here I was, I'm going to go in front of her. And our God works when we don't. And our God loves when we think he can't. And God walked in first, and then me and my little 10-year-old daughter walked in. And because of time constraint, I won't tell you how much times that little girl, who today will be 18 in a few weeks, and gave me my first grandchild, my grandson, 2 years ago. Young teenage mom, but still going to graduate. Be an example. That's all I can say on that one. But anyway, many a times I had tried suicide. I had been in Kekela, which is our cream of the crop, nut Looney Tune place. Twice I signed myself in. So, and I don't want to skip over it, but this is important. My first husband, I don't know how long after we were married. I got married when I was 19. Lola. Anyway, I thought, you know, he was retired from the military and that he was a bouncer and everything. And then I found out he really was Pimpin' Pete. So this was the day of Scarface Plates. You know, if you saw that movie. And Chavez and all that. And, excuse me. And, yeah, on the rock, the rock or whatever. Anyway. And the reason I had left him was because I found him in bed, and I just seen her story the other night on A&E biography or Lifetime or something, God bless her, but she was an entertainer, she still is. And I came home and my waterbed was swishing and they were checking out the no springs, well, whatever. So, you know, hi, Auntie Alice, you're cracking up. Anyway, yeah, so I went through that marriage, but I'd like to share with everybody today that that man is a reverend in North Carolina. Still keeps in touch with me. And so from Pimpin' Pete, he went to Pastor Pete. And before I get to the end, let me just tell you, from Jailbird Annie, I have gone to soar above and beyond. And it's all because of this program, the steps and the principles, and my sponsor, I love you, and my Solid Pack sisters, and all that good stuff. But so where did I leave off? So anyway, yeah, I got arrested, was in the courtroom, and by God's grace and mercy, and that's why I introduced myself, saved by grace, alcoholic. She wasn't the presiding judge, and the judge that did sit on, that courtroom was packed. And I am sure there were people in that courtroom that wanted to see me hung, dried, and made an example of. And there were people in that courtroom, like Judge Milks, who wasn't there that day, that knew who I really was outside of the disease and was hoping for the best for me. And then there was people that weren't in that courtroom, like my grandma and my mom and other people like that, that were on their knees. And that's how come I walked out of that courtroom with a 5-year DAG when I was looking at 45 years. A DAG is a deferred acceptance of guilty plea. In order to comply with that 5-year probation, you need to get a clinical discharge from a treatment facility program. You need to stay gainfully employed or be in school. And of course, you need to stay clean and sober. Well, that's why we have such a problem with POs and CPS and all that stuff. Because the clean and sober part is hard, so unless you come here. And by God's grace and mercy, I graduated. I am a proud, never forget that graduate of Ho'omau Keola. I know that. I don't forget that. That is a culturally sensitive treatment center here on Oahu. I am also today, by His grace and mercy, a counselor in the field of addiction at Hina Mauka. Supa. That's our word, Supa. But anyway, I walked out of that courtroom and, I thought, okay, yeah, 5 years. And I thought, okay, yeah, I can go back to work and I can do this and I can do that. But the first thing I knew I couldn't do was stay clean and sober by myself. And that's why they tell you go treatment. And treatment introduced me to 12-step meetings and the rooms of, you know, AA and NA. And I had a sponsor and I didn't use her. And I had phone numbers that I didn't use. If you are a newcomer sitting in this room because somebody made you come here, don't blame her. It was him. Anyway, I did graduate from treatment. Via treatment, you know, I used the resources available, and I got a certificate of completion from Lieber Community College, and I have been working as a counselor for the past almost 5 years. And I have been in nine months sober. I went to San Diego, California. 9 months sober. Amen. Yeah, those things are good, and I'll be in Canada. Thank you very much. But the miracle of how I got there was there was one of those flashy, you know, every treatment center or every group has one. And so this guy, he owned like a flower shop downtown, and he had the gold rings and the gold chains that would pull your neck down. But so anyway, we were on an outing, the treatment facility, you know, the van and all that. So hi my sister, I love you. We were on the on this outing. And he lost this $6,000 little pinky cluster goldy thing. So he told everybody in the van and everybody in the treatment center, he said, if you find that ring, he said, it costs $6,000. He said, you can keep it, take it to a pawn shop, guarantee you get $2,000, or you can give it back to me and I'll give you anything you want. Well, like addicts looking for a rock in the rug. People were scurrying and cleaning that park, and nobody found it. Again, I have a God that is so good. I was walking back to the van, and I saw this little sparkly thing, and, you know, I bent down, and I got in the van. I was the last to get in the van, by the way. Got in the van, started blowing it off. No, oh, that's not the ring I'm talking about. Some memories, just, you know, but anyway. So anyway, I got in the van, and the guy says, I said, brother, look, I found your ring. And he said, oh, sister, right on. So everybody else in the van is like, oh, you stupid, eh, you? You could have got $2,000. Oh, you're so dumb. You did. So brother says, sister, what do you want? I said, I would like to go to the San Diego International World Convention. So, 9 months sober. It's like giving birth. Anyway. So anyway, I went to the mainland, and I went to my first international, all expenses paid. And I remember standing in Jack Murphy Stadium with 85,000 other, or 65, whatever is the number, but there was choke. That's a little pigeon. You'll catch up with that this weekend. Anyway, I don't know. They always say, oh, local people, they talk funny, yeah? Because we like laugh. But anyway, holding hands with everybody in that beautiful big stadium and saying the Lord's Prayer, those of you that had that experience know, that solidified my thing. I said, yeah, this is where I want to stay. So I have stayed, and I need to share with everybody that when I started sharing, I told you that I made a commitment when I started saying my step three, learning, memorizing my step three prayer. My counselor had told me after I came back from escorting another girl that was in my facility, escorted her to her mother's house, and like I said, I'll be 45, so I knew the mom, and and the mom was still doing her thing, and her daughter sat at the table, and they passed around this thing, and it wasn't a drink, and they passed around this thing, and five times I kept saying no, 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 and just like that last stupid, cunning, powerful, baffling time, I said yes on the fifth time, and for five times I did that. So on October 2nd, I went back to treatment, and that's when my counselor told me I needed to memorize the third step prayer, and for a month I stayed in treatment, and was already working with my sponsor, who I still have today. I was working with her, and I was 1 month in this facility and knew that I had, you know, I had done something on October 2nd. And 1 month later, we were up at the lo'i. Talk to a Hawaiian, you like know that kind of stuff. We were up at the lo'i, which is a tarot patch, and work therapy, they call it. Bugs in your nose, mud up your panty, all that kind of stuff. Anyway, and I was ready to do my step five, and I know I had admitted to God to myself, and I of course would have wanted to go and tell my sponsor first, but it was just God's time. So I called my counselor on the side and I said, I need to tell you something. And when I did reveal this to her, she cried with me, she prayed with me. Some counselors, some professionals do that. And she told me, well, we'll just see what happens. Well, of course, it's 1 month later. They can't kick me out. I'm just saying this. But anyway, it was what freed me. My first step five freed me. And I will tell you now my sobriety date because it's very relevant. And if you're paying attention, you remember I was a correction officer, transporting officer. And we do that walkie-talkie thing all the time, 10-4-94. That is my sobriety date, 10-4-94. Anyway, I would love to go on and on and on, and I just need to share with everybody here, especially my local teras, that God has a purpose for our life. Every one of us sitting in this room and those that have yet to come through those doors, God has a purpose for our life. And being who we were and the kind of women that we were, and I will speak in the eye. As a counselor, I must learn these things. The kind of woman I was would not be here tonight. The kind of woman I have worked to become is still a work in progress. The kind of woman God envisions me is standing here tonight. I love you all. Mahalo.
Thank you, Sarah. Our next speaker is Debbie R. from the Big Island, Hawaii.
Debbie, I'm an alcoholic. Well, I was hoping it would be a small meeting. I thought it's going to be the first meeting and it'll be small. Oh, boy. And then I walked in and I saw the room empty and I thought, my God. Oh, boy. Well, I'm going to tell you what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. And I'm going to do that because that's the way I was taught to share. And I'm going to do that also because when a man at... you can't hear me? Okay. Thank you. I talk kind of softly anyway, and sometimes I mumble too, so... But I'm going to tell you what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now for two reasons. Well, maybe more. But that's the way I was taught to share. And the other reason is because I identified with a man who said he came to AA because he wanted to stop hurting when he was telling his story. And they used to tell me when I got sober that you stick around until you hear your story. And eventually I did hear my story. It was from a man with freckles and red hair from Arizona. Ugh, I could not believe it. I was waiting for some woman that, you know, looked nice and stuff to tell my story. And it was this guy with red hair. Ugh. Well, anyway, I had a lot of spiritual awakenings. I'm from the Midwest originally. I'm from the Chicago area. I did a lot of drinking in Chicago. Hey, okay. Anybody remember Budland, Burning Spear, the Glass House, CNC Lounge? I was there. I did a lot of drinking in Chicago, and I partied my ass off. I had a good time in Chicago, and then it turned against me. Not Chicago, but the drinking. Anyway, I was from a little small town north of Chicago, and I moved to Chicago, and I got a job, and there were two other women from my hometown, and we hung around together, and we partied together. Our job was to find out where the parties were. The parties didn't have enough men. We exited and looked for another party. And one of my awarenesses recently is, and you'd be surprised that it took me this long to figure this out, but you know, my drink was really a man. That was my high. And I had to drink to get to my real high, which was a man. Because I came from a family that was basically religious and had certain moral principles. And my moral principles before I drank was, you don't. But when I drank, I did. And, you know, so that put me in a lot of conflict because there were a lot of good-looking men out there and a lot of parties to go to. So I had to... The first time I drank, I was at a family gathering, and we had some relatives over from Michigan, and we had a jam session at the house, and I had a little wine, and it was really a spiritual experience. It took the edge off. I didn't know that's what it was, but it really took the edge off, and I liked it. And I looked forward to drinking again. Next time I drank, I was going to a junior college, and it was a small junior college. It was for people that didn't have money like me or for rich kids that had failed, you know, these real expensive schools and were trying to make up their credit. So anyway, one of the rich kids had a house available. Their parents had gone away for a couple weeks or something, and so this was a small school, so everybody in the school was invited. There were about 400 of us in this house. It was a nice party. Anyway, I drank, I got drunk,
you know, wrote a love letter to some guy. I hope I never see him again. Anyway, and a friend of mine took me over to her aunt's house, and they had this house. They had no kids, so they have white everything in their house, and I threw up all over their white stuff. I never saw them again either. So that was like my first drinking party, and things went on from there. I eventually quit school and I moved to Chicago. By then I was beginning to experience restless, irritable, and discontent, so I quit school and I moved to Chicago with this little job and partied for a while, and then I decided, well, maybe I need to do something with my life, so I decided I'd go back to school, so I went to art school. So I like to say I didn't drink when I was in art school, but I just did some dope, but I'm really not sure. I really don't know what I did in art school, but I had a lot of fun anyway. I did something. I painted a lot and made some stuff, you know. Anyway, I tell you, I look at my life. You know, I had a dream a long time ago that there was this woman with gray hair. My hair is gray now. You wouldn't know that because I color it, but there was this woman with gray hair, and she was looking at me and just shaking her head like, oh, my God. And that's the way I look back at myself now when I look at what I did when I was drinking. I mean, the stuff I did was so insane. And I had no idea. I thought I was actually normal. I thought that people that live what I now know is the usual life were just dull. I mean, what kind of life was it to go to work and come home and have dinner and raise the kids? I mean, gee. God, what kind of life was that? That was not what I pictured for myself. So anyway, I drank my way through life, and I eventually got through school. I had to change to another school because I couldn't figure out how to do what I needed to do to get accepted in the school I was going to. So I finally got out of school, and I got a job. By this time, I thought things were going downhill in Chicago. I started feeling like I was being hemmed in or locked in, and my drinking had changed. I was getting drunk really easy, and I couldn't figure out what I should drink. I mean, what the big book talks about in terms of all the things that we do to try to continue to drink, I did. I mean, I did it. I tried every drink in the book. I tried drink here, drink there. I thought maybe it was where I drank. I thought it was drinking with certain people. I thought it was drinking at certain times of day. I thought it was different combinations of things. Hi, Irma. I just saw you. My sponsor's here. Thank you for being here. I feel like crying. Anyway, I tried everything not to drink. I tried overeating. I tried that. I didn't know that I had done that till I got sober, but I tried that. I tried food, you know, and then the world was caving in on me. So I figured I needed to move. So I figured there were three places where I wanted to move. One was Jamaica, one was St. Thomas, and one was California. California was third on the list. Anyway, it ended up, luckily, I didn't get to St. Thomas or Jamaica because they probably would have run me out of there. Because I was crazy and I was right in the middle of my addiction. Anyway, I ended up moving to San Francisco. And, I mean, if you want to drink, yeah, and look sophisticated, move to San Francisco because it's right by wine country. You could... You can drink real good wine. You can go get your nails done and drink. You can wait for a table at a restaurant and stand outside in the line on the street and they'll bring you wine. You can go any place and get a drink in San Francisco. I mean, mom and pop stores on every corner, no problem. So anyway, I moved to San Francisco. I thought that would fix it. Because what I was always doing was I was looking for a way to find something outside to fix the inside. What was going on was inside I was dying. Spiritually I was dying. To make a long story short, what happened was I ended up in a black hole. I thought it was a vision one time, one night, of a woman with her hair all over her head and her face swollen and bloated. And I thought I'd had a nightmare. And what I realized was I had gotten up in the middle of the night and I'd seen myself in the mirror. That was the vision. It was me. And anyway, I woke up one morning and I knew I couldn't go on. By this time, I was unemployed. I had a lot of education, a lot of experience. I could send out my resumes, but I couldn't get to the interviews. So I ended up in bed one morning in a black hole. And I asked God to tell me what I'm here for. Later that morning, I was able to get up, and I went downtown. I had $35 to my name. I got my little money out of the bank. And I came home. And in the lobby of the apartment building I lived in was a magazine, a New Woman magazine. My sister, who's since deceased a few years ago, had given me a subscription to that magazine. And it had an article about women and alcoholism. It had a little quiz that talked about stress. And I knew I was stressed. I was very stressed that day. Anyway, so I took the quiz, because I like to take quizzes. And and I flunked it. So I took it again, and I cheated, and I still flunked it. Now, I had taken the AA 20 question quiz a few years before, and that quiz said I might have trouble with alcohol. But I had just gotten a piece of paper, and I knew I was smart. So, you know, might didn't tell me anything, so I went on drinking for a few years. Till I got to that black hole. So anyway, I had a little discussion with myself, and I was trying to decide whether I should call AA or not. And so I thought, well, I opened the book, and it said emergency phone number. And I thought, well, this really isn't an emergency. But then I thought, but if you don't call now, you'll never call. So I went back and forth for a couple minutes. Anyway, I called teleservice in San Francisco, and a lady called me back, and I described this strange experience I'd had. I told her I'd been to play cards, and I couldn't remember where I parked my car. And she said, oh, honey, you had a blackout. I wish I'd quit drinking after my first blackout. So I thought, oh, I had a blackout. Wow. So she said, do you want to come and meet me at a beginner's meeting tomorrow night? And I said, yeah, I'll do that. So I went down to St. Mary's Church in San Francisco, and they had a beginner's meeting at something like 6 o'clock and a big meeting afterwards. So I went there, and of course what I learned since then was I had many blackouts. I just called it forgetting. So and I couldn't figure out why these people would say they knew me and all my friends when I knew I'd never seen them before, you know. So more will be revealed. But anyway, so I went to AA thinking I'd had my first blackout. And there was a man that shared that night named Irwin, and he had had some slips, and he'd come back to AA. And he said he came to AA because he wanted to stop hurting. And when he said that, he really touched my heart because I knew exactly what he was talking about. There was a big meeting afterwards, and there were about 400 people, 400 or 500 people in that meeting. And I remember trying to figure out which ones were the alcoholics because everybody looked so healthy. And people were laughing, you know. A year later, when I went back to that same meeting, I thought that it would be very light outside because what I remembered from the first time I went to that meeting was that there was a lot of light. And what I realize now is that I've come home to God. At my first meeting, I won a book and a raffle, and a lady wrote in it, "Welcome to the Fellowship of the Spirit." And I'd done a lot of spiritual questing, But I couldn't stick with anything. I knew they were telling the truth, but I couldn't stick with it. I was still drinking. And when I came to AA, I came home. Since I've been in AA, a lot of strange things have happened. One of them is I moved to Hawaii about 6 or 7 years ago, something like that. Another one was I married a man I knew for 20 years who was a musician. He told me he didn't have a problem with drugs or alcohol, and I actually believed him. He was a drummer. Anyway, that's what happens when you're 3 or 4 years sober. You believe anything. Anyway, I remember there was this woman talking about she was 12 years sober and she was just in her first relation. I thought, well, forget that. I'm not waiting until I'm 12 years sober. So I got married at 3 years sober or 4 years sober, whatever it was. Anyway, I've had such strange experiences in AA, and the people have been wonderful. They've been really tolerant of me, and they've helped me so much. When I came to AA, one of the first things that I heard was people talking about having slips. And I always like to talk about this because I was afraid that I was going to have a slip. And the reason why I was afraid I was going to have a slip was because I knew I had come right to the edge. And I knew that I was going to go over if I didn't stop drinking. I could see that I was going to wherever San Francisco Skid Row was. I knew that. I didn't have any doubt. I had no doubt at all. So when people talked about slips in the room the first month I was in AA, I was scared. I couldn't afford to have one. And then a man named Cy P. stood up in the room. He was about 15 years sober at the time. And he said, I want to guarantee you that you do not have to slip. If you work the steps, you get a sponsor, and you serve others, you do not ever have to drink again. So, you know, I'm not the best sponsor, because what I do is I sponsor by the steps. I don't tell people to leave their husband or their boyfriend. I don't give them advice about jobs. I just ask them to work the steps. And if someone is not willing to work the steps, that's their choice. But I know what I had to get to be willing to work the steps. I know the trouble I have to get into today before I work the steps. So I know it's really up to each individual to do that, and I'm there to help when somebody is willing to. Anyway, I moved to Hawaii a few years ago, and that has been a very healing experience for me. When I first came here, people said, oh, you know, the Big Island is a healing island. And I think, what does that mean for me? But the thing that's been unusual about me being in Hawaii is that I actually moved here, number one. I knew for about 2 or 3 years before I moved here that a big change was coming. I knew I couldn't force it. I just had to wait for it to come. And when the time came, I had a temporary job for 3 months. The job extended for 6 months, and I've been here ever since, because what happened was I found out about some coursework that I wanted to take, not formal learning in the traditional sense, but through a kumu, a Hawaiian teacher. And I got involved with that and have been involved with that for a little over 5 years now. And that has deepened my appreciation for AA, because this was a spiritual commitment, and it's a commitment I could not have made without having been in AA for a number of years. So, you know, all I can say about this fellowship is that it's the most powerful experience I've ever had. It's certainly life-changing. It has changed my life, and it's changed my attitude. It's opened my heart. There was something we were reading last night in one of the stories, and the man said that it's something like it's a program of love, and that the idea is that we love our neighbors as ourselves. And that's a very difficult thing for someone like me, who basically on my own is going to wake up in the morning thinking about what I want, what I need, and how I'm going to get it. Because that's where my head goes, because I'm driven by fear. I'm not driven by love. My life experiences have given me this level of fear that causes me to think about myself first. And in the process, then, I get in trouble. When I get in trouble, I want to drink because I don't want to face the facts of what I've done. So anyway, this has been, the time in Hawaii has been very uplifting for me. It has changed my heart. And it has changed my heart because I've been in AA, and AA has given me a way to live my life in such a way that I think about other people first. And when I make a mistake and I think about myself first, I can honestly admit it and change my attitude and change my behavior and go to someone and say, "Did I do something that offended you?" It's so easy to do that. It's so easy to do that now. And I had a hard time doing that. I thought for most of my life as an adult that other people were out for themselves, so I had to be out for myself. And the truth is that most people don't operate that way. But my attitude changed because of my drinking, and my drinking made things worse. Anyway, I'm still here in Hawaii. I hope I stay here for a long, long time. I thank God every day for this beautiful place to live. I live on the Big Island, which I believe is the best island. Though I think Oahu is beautiful. I love the polis of Oahu, and I like many things about the other islands, but the Big Island is just so fabulous to me. Last night we were driving down to a meeting, and you know, the ocean is on the right side and the mountains, you know, are on the left. And so we're driving along, and there was all this light, and I thought, what is that spotlight? And I turned around, and I looked to the left, and there's this big moon right over Hualalai. I mean, it was just fabulous, and it hadn't risen yet. So here are the peaks of Hualalai and this big moon over it. It was just wonderful. Just, I hope you all move to Hawaii. And if any of you want to come to the Big Island and visit, I'll be happy to give you my number. I'd love to see all of you over there because you'll love it, I'm sure, as much as I do. Am I supposed to talk more? I can talk more? Okay. So let's see. What else can I tell you about being sober? I've had a chance to meet some wonderful people since I've been sober, and that's the other gift of AA. This is my first women's conference, and maybe I should tell you about the change in my attitude towards women. Or do I need to tell you? When I got sober, there were a couple women that befriended me, and they used to come by and pick me up and take me to this home group meeting that I had, and I hated my home group. I hated AA. I did not like AA. I came to AA because I was afraid of drinking again, and I did not like AA. I'm sorry. I did not like the people here. I didn't think they dressed right. Some people didn't have teeth, you know. They were not cute the way I thought. I mean, really, that was my attitude. You know, my ass was grass, but people didn't look right, you know. And then this brother came up to me at Thanksgiving, and he said, "Yeah, baby," he said, "I know how you feel." He said, "You're going to these church basements, and now you're stuck with all these people," he said, "and you want to be in the bars and out in the clubs, and you want to be dancing and carrying on." I'm going, "Yeah, yeah, yeah." And he said, "Well, those days are gone forever." Oh, man, I'm telling you. I thought he must be crazy, me? But anyway, so these women would come by and pick me up and take me to meetings. So this one time they said, "Well, we're going down to this little Italian restaurant in the marina. Do you want to come have dinner with us?" So I said, "Well, okay, fine." I didn't have anything else to do. So it was a Friday night. So I'm sitting at this big table at this little Italian restaurant in the marina with all these AA women. And I'm sitting there thinking, "Ain't this a bitch?" Friday night with all these women and no wine. You know? that said I wasn't going to make it. I did make it for a year. I was grateful for that for all the time since. But anyway, that was my attitude towards women. Women were friends, you know, if I didn't have anything else to do, like, you know, with a man or something like that, you know. And then a girlfriend, you know, I might call her or something like that, but I was certainly not going to be caught dead with a woman on a Friday or Saturday night. So you can see how messed up my mind was. You know, I'm a woman. I didn't even value myself. That's basically what it amounted to. But I know that now, but I didn't know that then. And that's another gift of this program. I can value myself. I went to a wedding of a couple. And at that wedding, what I realized was another problem I had was I couldn't go anyplace by myself. There was a reception at the church after the wedding, and I actually had to grab somebody's arm and tell them that I was getting confused and disoriented because I wasn't with anyone, and I was afraid I would get lost. And I was a year sober then. So I've come a long way. I can do things on my own now. You know, I can be my own person now. So when, you know, people criticize women who are new in the program because they're chasing men, well, I did the same thing. You know, I didn't catch anybody, but, you know, it's all right. But there was this guy I used to follow around to meetings. I can't even remember his name now. His name was Al. And I secretly called Al my husband. I swear to God. I called Al my husband, and I'd follow him to meetings. He never knew this. And then one day I saw him downtown, and I was carrying something, and I didn't see him at a meeting. I got so confused, I dropped everything on the street. I was not well. But anyway. But, you know, God heals all wounds. You know, and God is gracious. And I'm really grateful to be here. I don't know that I have too much more to say, but I do want to say this. You know, I'm grateful to AA. I'm grateful for the women in AA. I'm also grateful to the men in AA who have, you know, all the people have been helpful to me, all sizes, shapes, and colors, all ages. And I want to say this because I truly mean this from the bottom of my heart. You know, of myself, I'm nothing. God has given me that experience. I know that. I was nothing when I came to AA. I was empty. You know, and now there's a God in my life. And I have a fellowship around me that loves me. And I'm here at a conference speaking to women that I never thought I would do. I all week long, lights are out. Let the good times roll. Anyway, you know, all week long I've been saying, God, I can't believe it. I mean, you know, I haven't tried to do anything in AA. You know, I haven't worked for anything in AA. All I've done is show up every day to keep a meeting pattern that keeps me comfortable, make sure I have a sponsor, talk to my sponsor about my problems, take advice from people, which is a big thing because that's something new for me, and to try to be of service to others. I think I can end on that note. Thank you.